And another thing. No, that's
you folks missed the off-air rant. It was awesome. So fantastic.
They usually are.
We
anyway.
Should bottle that and sell it.
To who? I don't know.
Get as
anyway,
much as Nestle water. Maybe.
Welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz, and I just noticed I've been bitten by like a radioactive spider or something in studio here,
ew.
Adam, so if anything happens... just keep talking. Just leave me on the floor.
Better than like when I went to get the bus after going to see Godzilla on Tuesday, and you know, because it's like right near the standing water between the road and the Wendy's there, and so every mosquito in town.
Oh, I thought you were gonna say some guy sprayed you.
No, it was, anyway, that's for another. That's another.
This
time.
Is a whole
other
show.
Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show. You can find us here every Thursday at 5 p.m. as we talk about the latest news items from Guelph, Ontario, Canada, and around the world, and sometimes interview local newsmakers and politicians, as we will today. But first, we are going to talk about how the world is drowning in plastic and the difficulties in getting everyone to go plastic-free, and is there a way we can dig out of this plastic garbage pile we've built for ourselves? And then we'll have Ward 5 Councillor Kathy Downer back in studio to talk about driveways, the LPAT, and all the latest doings.
All the initials.
At City Hall. All the initials at City Hall. I thought I'd turn that off, but that's fine.
Three strikes, dude.
I know, right? Our first topic today is going to be 1 year of Doug Ford in office. But before that, I want to just... do some breaking news, and I have the appropriate music queued up, so just hold on a sec.
My goodness.
Hold on. We have to say a fond farewell today. Excuse me. To Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the press secretary.
No!
After 3.5 years of loyal service in the White House, even though he's only been president for 2.5 years... Donald Trump just announced that she will be resigning as of the end of June. She's going back to Arkansas, where Trump hopes she'll be governor.
I've never seen Adam so shook up. Breaking news, old news. The tears are flowing everywhere in the studio. It's about an inch of
I know,
of
I know.
Pure
it's,
water.
It's horrible news. I can't wait to see who replaces her. I went with...
I feel I want to stand up and salute
her.
I
know, right?
This is the classic, yeah.
It was either going to be the bagpipe version of Amazing Grace or Nearer My God to Thee, but...
Titanic song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was supposedly the last thing they played on the Titanic. And definitely the last thing they played on James Cameron's Titanic.
Now, was
on.
She fired, or she's just leaving?
This was one of these classic...
It's time to move on.
This is one of these classic Trump tweets. That come at
Thank
random.
You for your service. And she's like, what?
And,
me?
Yeah. So far as we know, I mean, there was rumors that she was going to leave at the end of 2018 after the election, but the rumors were that... that she couldn't get a job. She couldn't get another job somewhere, which may be why she's going back to Arkansas, where her family's from, where her father was governor. Farewell.
Maybe she can work at... Is Huckabee's a restaurant? No.
No.
What's that restaurant that sounds like Huckabee's? I don't know. It could be a regional thing. I just remember eating somewhere.
Well, you know what? Sarah Huckabee Sanders has had trouble getting into restaurants, so maybe it would be in her interest to open her own restaurant.
Saunders. You can go to the Saunders one instead of the Huckabee's one.
I'm not. She might want to...
Probably.
Yeah, anyway.
Well, that's breaking. When did that happen? I totally
like
missed it.
A half hour ago.
A minute ago, yes. Yeah, I was in transit. I did not hear.
So getting back to our own disaster artist, Doug Ford.
Ooh.
It's been quite a week.
We say that every week, don't we? It's like, I was going through my notes, and this says Doug Ford, and this says Doug Ford.
I know it's, but he rose the legislature. We mentioned this last week. The legislature rose for the summer last week. 144-day break.
Sweet.
They're still working, in their constituency offices.
Well,
and such.
Yeah, like, some of them.
Like, Mike Schreiner isn't in Barbados. You'll see him around town a lot.
No, because if he is, we're going to hold him to account. No, but we know that he isn't because he's always around town. But that's,
he's not on the Aga Khan's island, deep cut.
I guess it's not our place to judge until the 144 days are up. However, you try it. You take 144 days off your job. It's just that I'd heard somebody
in my dreams.
Yeah, exactly. I heard somebody comment today. It's like they're so worried about the teachers taking all this time off, and it's they like trebled it pretty much, pretty close. So, yeah, but that may be the least of the province's worries. It seems that there's still things ongoing. Obviously, even though they have risen, like what's going on in the Court of Appeal. Right. Mm-hmm. Did the province overstep when it interfered with the size of the Toronto Municipal Council? That came up this week during the 2018 election. It would seem the decision is currently being reserved. So when they do that, it just gets kind of punted down the road a bit, and it could take like weeks or months or maybe even sometime next year before it gets a hearing. Was this under the Better Local Government Act?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which was the name of the act that the government passed.
It's also
gets
slotted into the another stupid bill name act, yeah. it's getting ridiculous. But yeah, so that's something to look out for, I guess. There was a flurry of activity, and it's just going to get moved down the road. But I'm sure the deflect and whatever.
Well, I have definitely noticed a precipitous decrease in, like, stuff happening in the last week. Like, in past weeks, it's been, like, Monday, we're
nuking this. Yeah,
we're getting rid of the Department of Education. It's just gone. On Tuesday, we might be reconsidering that, but on the other hand, we're going to have to eliminate half the jobs from the mining ministry or something. Like, it's just like none of that stuff's happened, but it just seems like consequential stuff like that happens over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And this week, I think the big story was this Toronto Star expose that Doug Ford, well, first, there were kind of two exposés. The first was the rumor that Doug Ford was going to shuffle the cabinet less than a year after getting the cabinet sworn in, which I don't know if that's some kind of record, but basically Doug Ford is supposedly unhappy with the rollout of the budget, which I'm not sure is the fault of any particular minister.
But it got 100 standing ovations.
I know.
More than Kim Jong-un gets. It must be the greatest budget ever.
Well, I mean, I don't think it's the budget that was the problem. It's how, like, if you look at the budget, there's sort of no page where you can sort of, like, see all the cuts. Even though, like, there's...
That's because it all trickled out. Because people had to dig through all the bills to find out
where
the cuts were.
That's
right?
the issue.
Like, just post the cuts, man. You're the government. Like,
right. That I read one, like, sort of insider guy say, like, what they should have done was just had a page in the budget that had, like, all the cuts, like, right there in a spreadsheet.
It's kind of negative.
And then, you just put it out there, and then you have, like, one news cycle of bad stories as opposed to, like, many news cycles of negative stories.
Yeah, because it behaved like a leak. Everything was a leak.
Yeah.
Like, yesterday was the day the cuts to legal aid were implemented, which were in the budget, retroactive to April 1st. So there's something that's, you know, directly related to the budget but is just happening now. And it would seem that this is going to completely trash legal aid, especially for people, you know, the usual at risk that don't have any means, marginalized. Mm-hmm. They said some legal aid offices will be down like 43% or as high as 50%. They'll be very hamstrung as to what they'll be able to do and help out. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be lots of people that are, you know, well, you can't have a preliminary hearing because there's no legal aid for you to do
or
that, and if you can't pay
a bail hearing,
yeah, then you just stay in jail, right? If I got that right,
yeah.
Like, there's no, if you can't have a bail hearing, then
yeah,
or you just defend yourself, which is not good. So it remains to be seen how that's going to pan out. But that just happened, and I don't understand. They backed off on some of them, but the retroactive cuts, like, come on, can you not just say we're going to draw the line here rather than going back in time like
year.
They did with the midwives, and I mean, you name it, it's all like, oh, we're going to cut this. By the way, you've already spent the money that we're not going to give to you.
Well, yeah, and long after
it's
budgets
vindictive,
have been
man.
Sent.
It's like,
yeah, it's...
In my opinion.
Again, and again, it's...
In the province's opinion, pretty much.
Well, it's vindictive because there are so many people in the Tory caucus that should know better, given that they come from municipal backgrounds. And I did that list last week or the week before that. But, you know, when you have, like, former mayors, former city councilors, former CAOs, people who have been in the trenches of municipal politics and know what that schedule looks like, knows that the city budget goes from January to December, knows that those budgets were set in January and February and maybe in a few cases March. But by the time you get to the provincial government, everybody's sort of done their calculations. And some – I know – I can't remember – specifics, but I know that the city of Guelph made some allowances that they probably weren't going to get increases in certain areas that they might have liked if had the Wynn government been reelected and that budget had been allowed to carry through. Things like the gas, like an increase in the gas taxes, or promises about shared spending on transit infrastructure that was promised. You know, that's kind of gone out the window, but you know, there are other things. Just like the basics of things like legal aid. Like, who would have guessed legal aid would have been cut? Because there's never enough money for legal aid. Same thing for childcare. Same thing for health units, which is a complicated funding formula, especially for some place like Guelph, where it's all the various towns in Wellington County, all the various towns in Dufferin County, and then there's Guelph. And everybody pays a different share, and everybody has a different ownership stake. And there's offices in the WDGH. That's, you know, there's the one here on Chancellor's Way, but there's also an office in Orangeville. There's an office in, you know,
everywhere that court proceedings take
and
place.
And a myriad of services too, you know, things from like flu shots to the, you know, the restaurant inspections.
Yeah. And of course, I kind of read two versions. It was one of those, you've seen this before too probably, where you get two versions of the same story and because something has broken since they first published it. So it was the story in the Star about the, like you were saying, about being unhappy about the budget and the potential cabinet shuffle. And then it was sort of remastered later in the day to include the business with Dean French allegedly making an MPP who remains unnamed cry. And this seemingly had some kind of profound effect on Doug Ford. The point was like, well, we're going to treat our people better.
Right.
So that's an undercurrent there, that because it sounds like, you know, Dean French, and this is not a secret, that he has a particular mode or way of doing things. And to me, from this article and others that I've read in reputable sources, it sounds like he might actually be running the show.
Well, and but it was confirmed by like multiple people. I don't think any of whom were like sort of
on the record, but yeah.
But it was this one MPP who they identified as from the Greater Toronto Area, which
could be,
I mean, is where like most of the the conservative MPPs
like saying,
come from.
Yeah, an MPP from Canada. Yeah.
So there was this one MPP who was like French, basically made her or him break down in tears with his scolding skills. But there's also a Toronto area MPP who's also having negative run-ins with Dean French. And I mean, that's hard. That's a little bit easier to suppose who that might be, because there's only so many Toronto MPPs, and it would be out of line to suggest, you know, perhaps Carolyn Mulroney, who's, you know, was once a leadership candidate.
Yeah, and is also a conservative royalty.
Yeah, so it's kind of frightening that you have MPPs saying that they feel like they're living in the former Soviet Union, that there's a culture of fear, that it feels like they have the KGB watching them, which is not entirely out of...
This has come from inside the house, too. This isn't like an independent analysis from people like us or whoever, right? It's like
that, you know, it's because they're watching to make sure who's getting up and barking like a seal the loudest.
1,000 times a week.
Right, you know, and like keeping checklists, keeping their list and checking it twice about who's the most loyalist in the caucus.
And then the bad kids like Randy Hillier, who's being sued by Dean French, right?
Yeah, Dean French is suing Randy Hillier, who tried half-heartedly to post an apology on Twitter, which Dean French did not accept. That's another story entirely. But the thing is that what you said is like the... You know, it seems like the staffers are running the show, because Doug Ford goes into this caucus meeting and says, like, MPPs should be respected by staff. Staff do not supersede MPPs if that's the way they've been acting. And he goes on to say, I'm tired of all this combativeness. This
really,
right? You know,
so he didn't see my facial expression then. I gave him the what?
He said he's tired of the infighting and being so adversarial. And I'm like, Doug Ford, do you pay attention to you? Like, do you
it's
know
you
what
guys.
You
it's
do?
Me. It's you guys.
It's but I mean, it could be a thing where he's maybe not entirely
detached.
Aware of his own style.
Yeah. But he thinks he's folksy, but like his brother, but maybe.
Well, I mean, if
he was the heavy of the two, like in terms of the enforcer,
yes.
Right? Yeah.
Doug Ford was. I mean, Doug Ford was not Doug Ford. Rob Ford was was more personable. I mean, Rob Ford could be a bully. He learned from the best. But, you know, there was definitely a dominant, submissive relationship between the two of them. And I was talking to...
How dare you attack my brother?
And I was talking to, of all people, Vince, when before we recorded End Credits this week about this. Is, you know, people forget... In 2013, before crack, and you know, before the crack scandal broke,
Rob's crack, yeah, Rob, I mean, just in general, yeah.
Rob was doing this ridiculous weigh-in weight loss challenge every week, where they would gather the Toronto press corps. He would come in, get weighed on a comically big scale.
Yeah, the novelty.
And it was Doug's idea, though.
Oh, really?
It was Doug's idea.
He was in on it too, wasn't he, Doug? Were they both doing it, or was it just Rob?
I think they... I don't remember exactly, but I could have sworn at the beginning they were both doing it, and then it became all about Rob. And, you know, if that wasn't an act of bullying, bringing your brother who has a weight issue and is clearly self-conscious about it, bringing him out and, you know, putting him on display like this every week... I'm sorry, Doug. You may say you don't want an adversarial relationship and you don't want infighting. That's clearly how you've run your political life. So
if you need a giant,
it starts at the top, bro.
If you need a giant novelty scale, there's probably one under a cover in the basement of Toronto City
Casa
Hall.
Casa de Ford. Although, the other story this week was about how they want to keep Doug Ford quiet, which is why you get 144 days of summer vacation, because they don't want Doug having a Doug eruption during the federal election. I say that because...
It's going to happen, though.
Because Ford Fest is next Saturday in Markham.
We really, really, one of these days, need to go.
I wouldn't mind.
Okay, well, I have to work this Saturday. Sorry. Maybe next year.
Maybe next year. There's always next year.
Yeah, and there's always next week for this topic. I'm pretty sure we're going to be talking about this before 144 days are up.
Yeah.
Have our guarantee that something's going to happen. Strike somewhere.
I mean, stuff happened this week. I thought we were going to talk about like a wrap-up of like the year, but like stuff was breaking this week and the legislature wasn't even sitting anyway. Maybe we'll have Mike call in from his... Mexican beach home. I kid. I kid.
He drove there in an electric car.
He drove there in an electric car. That's right. And then he paraglided the rest
he's
of the way.
He's never going to come on the show again.
No.
He's a good sport.
He's a
excellent
fan.
Excellent sport, yeah.
So what a lot of people aren't a fan of is plastic, single-use plastic everywhere. Mountains of the stuff, polluting our oceans. And I found this out. There was an Australian... study sponsored by the WWF. That's the World Wildlife Fund, not the World Wrestling Federation.
We're old enough to remember when I meant wrestling, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they did change it to the WWE some years ago, but I digress. That says that we ingest about 5 grams of plastic, microplastic, every week, 2,000 little pieces, which if you were to line them all up would be roughly the shape of a credit card.
Wow.
So... we're so plastic polluted, you're eating a credit card's worth of plastic. You're eating a credit card every week.
No matter what you eat, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is one of those things where it does kind of descend into statistics, but very necessarily, including the one that I was super surprised was regarding the amount of plastic bottles used in bottled water, in particular in China. Supposedly they have like a quarter of global bottled water demand. And in 2016, get this, 73.8 billion billion bottles. I believe most of that was to water, which supposedly is the same weight as all of the people. You take all the people on Earth, all right, which is 5 point whatever billion, pushing 6. The weight is the same of all the plastic just in China, just in bottles, mostly water, for a year. And it's like, oh boy.
Well, we, I mean,
that's all I can say. It's like, wow.
Canadians, I mean, the numbers are staggering. Canadians throw away 34 million bags.
Shopping bags.
Yeah. So.
And then the bag industry's arguing, like, well, you know, it takes at least 100 more uses of that renewable bag or your permanent bag to make up the energy from a plastic bag. How about no bag? You know, like, just carry the thing. we're getting there. The consciousness is there.
Except
but we haven't.
We live in a highly consumer-driven society, and Lord knows from my retail job,
everybody
I see people
wants
who buy.
Bag, yeah.
Well, I'll get there, but there are some people who will like in lieu of spending 5 cents for a plastic bag, will try to carry their dozen or so items in their arms.
Dishes.
It's I've seen it happen. But I mean, you can't sort of and yeah, it takes more energy to make like a reusable bag than it does to make a plastic bag. But at the same time, I've had reusable bags in my staple of like bags I take grocery shopping for like 10, 15 years.
Yes.
Some of them have a good long shelf life. We have to carry things. That's the nature of taking stuff from, you know, moving stuff from one place to the other. But you're right about people and wanting their plastic bags. But I will tell you, the people who are the angriest about paying 5 cents for a plastic bag, you know what group it is?
The biggest cheapskates?
Well, I meant like... I meant like, you know, in terms of demographics.
I'm going to say seniors? Or?
Yes.
Nothing against seniors, but I know how the world works. I'm closer to being a senior than I am a millennial, so I gotcha.
Well,
yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah, exactly, but, right? It's like, I know that generation.
But yeah, it's a habit that it's hard to break, which is weird because on the other hand, you have bottled water and... You know, you go back 20 years, 25 years, bottled water was this weird idea that, you know, you could get water from the tap. Why would you buy for a bottle?
If you played sports, you had a water bottle.
Right.
But any other time, you just found a fountain, which is getting difficult to do now, actually. Although there seems to be a bit of a comeback. Like the ones on campus where you can refill a bottle lots and lots of times. And if you read the counter on that thing, it's thousands. Yeah. And that's just here. Yeah. One place,
right? There's kind of a split too. It's kind of like an either or prospect. Either you find like a water fountain where it's like sort of like single serve water fountain, so to speak, or you find one of those like bottle refill things.
Yeah,
and you know, maybe sometimes you don't have your bottle with you, but you want to drink the water. It's, I mean, there are ways around it, of course.
But no one died, you know, in the past, like the pre-bottled water era, for lack of not being able to get a drink of water somewhere, right?
Well, they did an excellent job of saying like your tap water might kill you. Like they don't come out and say that, but you know there are you could drink stuff in your tap water that you probably wouldn't. Like there's like the Zero Water commercials where there's like, oh, there's 200 particulates in your tap water.
And it never fails, being a university town, there's people new to Guelph that will hear that the water is bad, when in actual fact it's just very hard.
Yeah.
Which isn't necessarily bad.
No.
And every, you know, move-in days, people talking in these cases of water. It's like, this doesn't make any sense.
No, well, right? I mean, hard water.
Hard water is hard water.
Like, hard water doesn't affect like how you drink.
No, just let it run for a little while.
And I hate to tell you this, but in your pack of bottled water is the same water that comes out of the freaking tap.
Yeah. Sometimes with less treatments, right?
Oh, sure, for sure.
Depending where you get it from.
But back
in 19 dickety whatever, you know, we used to just drink out of puddles, no, whatever.
So I mean, one of the things I find interesting is that I tried to find some sort of like counter argument articles about single use plastic ban.
Was it from the plastics industry? Maybe.
Well, I mean, that was like they were like often quoted because, and they're trying to make the economic argument, right? Because I mean, it's what's saving the oil patch. They're trying to say like we got. Where are my numbers? Give me numbers. 93,000 jobs at 1,900 companies that the plastic industry is worth $35 billion a year. We basically have 3.3 million tons of plastic a year that becomes just garbage. And like 85% of it goes right into the landfill, mm-hmm. or right into places where you shouldn't have garbage, like fields and streams and oceans and things. So basically, for every ton of garbage that the plastic industry creates, they're making $10.6 billion.
Oh.
So, you know, how much, you know, you it's nice that you guys, this group is making money and, you know, good paying middle class jobs, etc.
Yeah.
But at what cost is that at the other end, especially when you're hearing things like sharks and whales being found with like several pounds of plastic in their stomachs.
Yeah.
And you go down to the Marianas Trench now, and there's traces of plastic
in
the deepest part of the planet. You find traces of plastic. It's incredible. And, you know, so anyway, back to trying to find negative articles. Aside from the plastic industry, which even that seems like a half-hearted thing, it is sort of interesting to see that there's actually not like an organized effort to sort of stop any discussion about reining in single-use plastics.
Yeah, because it's one of those things. What are the options, right? It's like we either strive to recycle more, mm-hmm. but I mean, there's lots. I heard that the pop industry in particular, the soda industry, doesn't like the fact, you know, when you recycle plastic, it can't be clear. There needs to be, or you invest heavily in, like they do on campus here with researching into other materials, usually plant-based, that will eventually break down into nothing. And I didn't realize this, but one of the plastics that's being banned, they call it, it's oxo-degradable. If you've ever seen a plastic bag that's been sitting around for 20 years and it goes all weird, there's things in current plastics, certain ones, that will make them break down. But of course, what does it break down into? It breaks down into the microplastic and stuff that you end up eating. It's not benign. You want it to break down into nothing, and that's the problem. And funny enough, when this was announced, I was driving around. Here we go, Mr. Enviro. Driving around, and I had like 6 bags of mulch and 4 bags of magic soil in my car for the garden. I'm thinking, how is Canada going to implement that if you're going like everything in a garden center? You don't realize how much plastic until you sit down and you say, you know what, everything, the stuff you get from Costco, the mulch in the bag, there's very little that's in, well, let's call it alternative materials,
right?
Paper, the old ones, I remember, foil, you know, it's
and on top
chocolate
of that,
bars, every chocolate bar is in a plastic wrapper.
And on top
every
of that, there was
one.
There was a study that said that people don't want to pay extra for green packaging. People are perfectly fine going with less plastic, but
eat a credit card a week.
Yeah, they don't want to pay extra for it. And you know, it's not a thing that's going to happen all at once for sure. But I think like you can very easily start with like plastic bags and straws. Get rid of those. You know, we can do it a bit at a time. You know, Trudeau comes out and says like we're going to get banned it by 2021. It's like, okay, dude, like you're the guy that couldn't get electoral reform done and other things.
Bag reform, however.
But
no problem.
But
it's good optics. It's an election year.
Right. I mean, that's what it was about.
Realistically,
I mean,
that's
when you see that film too, where he's like filming like right next to the most beautiful part of the most beautiful lake they could find.
And then pan back and it's bags all around.
But
bottles.
But I mean, it's going to be a long haul because, like, as you said, plastic is everywhere in everything. And it even extends to, and this is sort of one of the few plastic articles I could find, was like the medical industry, because everything has to be sterile.
Bag.
And,
and,
you know.
It's like the glass ones you see in.
Right. In old
films.
In like the
MASH
Nick and things. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not going to happen all at once, but, you know. It will happen, I think, and it has to happen because
let's hope.
Like these pictures of just like you don't even see the water; you just see a garbage wave. It's incredible. Anyway, we're gonna take a break, and then we're gonna bring Ward 5 City Councilor Kathy Downer into the studio for a chat. You're listening to Open Sources Guelph. You're on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
Basketball is a good game. Play if you want to win a trophy. But if you're bad at basketball, you can try, you'll get better. Basketball is a good game.
Song from 2018, I believe it's rising in the charts here in CFRU. It's made a bit of a comeback because of the times. That was Basketball by Wax Mannequin. Wax Mannequin from Hamilton, but he has some very strong Guelph connections. So, yeah. gets right to the point. Basketball is a good game, and you should practice, and maybe one day you'll be a Raptor. I don't know.
I look forward to the Raptors winning tonight so that I'll never have to hear about it.
Ooh,
for the next...
The resident curmudgeon,
yes.
Adam A. Donaldson, has chimed in. But yeah, you're probably the same with some people, the same with the hockey yesterday, right? It's like oh, Blues
I'm just sick of turning on CP24 and watching SportsCenter, which is not what's... Like, I call it SportsCenter because they're just talking about basketball incessantly. Anyway, we're not here to talk about basketball. We didn't bring Kathy Downer in here to talk about basketball. unless you want to, but I mean, I mean, you might be hearing about it because it looks like the square might be rained out tonight.
Yeah, again.
I have to say, is local basketball. I quite enjoyed the Nighthawks last Saturday. Oh. So it was good.
I heard there seemed to be a lot of people out for that.
Yeah.
I ran into Cam as well.
Yeah.
Oh, First Lady sang the anthem, so it was really good. So I think there's some potential for that here.
Mm-hmm.
Not just once Raptor fever is gone, people can go watch.
You heard Sarah McLachlan singing the anthem tonight at the Raptors game.
Oh, I think I said she's going to come sing it in Guelph.
That would be a get.
You never know, right? She's sung here before.
Who knows?
She has, but I mean, that was before. That was like back in the Lilith Fair days.
Yes.
Anyway.
Yeah, I was going to say 91, but anyway.
We're getting off topic and we haven't even started yet.
I know.
So, Kathy, I wanted to first ask, it's been, you know, a couple of contentious council meetings about climate emergencies, and I think, you know, there was a close vote with the driveway thing the other night, and it seems like we're kind of reaching that phase of the new council where we're kind of mixing it up and things are getting combative. Are you feeling that?
Yeah, to some extent on these issues. I mean, certainly, you know, some could say, well, maybe the honeymoon's over, right? But, you know, I don't, you know, generally, I think we get along fairly well. These have been contentious issues were turned into contentious issues.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly. So, you know, hopefully we get through that and that doesn't continue is my hope. Yeah.
Good. Well, you know, we can't have you in without sort of talking about one of your pet issues, which is, you know, what's going on at the LPAT, what was formerly known as the OMB. And I think it was maybe this time last year when we were talking to you and it was like the changes had gone through and we were looking forward to some smooth sailing at what was once the OMB and now we're going back to the old OMB rules. And
we were very excited and I'd gotten together with a group of councillors from around the GTAs and mayors and, you know, had heavily advocated for, you know, abolishing the OMB. So, of course, we were quite elated when the local planning appeals tribunal came in and was much weakened power. And then this just sort of really threw a lot of us for a surprise because even at AMO, where I sit on the Board of Association Municipalities of Ontario, we had been advocating, don't touch the LPAT. Like, don't tinker with it yet. It hasn't even been in force for quite a while yet. And you know, they gave one of the reasons, oh, it's taking so long to get through. No, these are the appeals that are still under the old OMB rules that they're still dealing with. I mean, we waited 5 years for our official plan to get through the process. So none of the rationale seems to make any sense. I mean, adding more adjudicators, they could have done that with the LPAT. They didn't need to go back to the old rules of basically taking the decisions away from local municipalities again is what they've done. So it's very disappointing, and it'll be expensive again for neighborhood groups or anybody to navigate their way through the system and then to find the funds to do it. Remember, the McElderry group had to give up after $50,000 and just become a participant. They had to; they were going to need to raise actually $100,000.
Right.
And so, then they were not part of the mediated solution, and then it becomes a behind the closed doors those things. So, it's really disappointing and quite frustrating, you know. And in the bill, there were, you know, quite a bit of other bad news around DCs as well.
Right.
Things like that. So development charges.
But it adds another weird layer to this because we had procedures that began under the OMB that were continuing. And then a year ago, we go to the LPAT rules that changes them. So you have another section of appeals going under a different set of rules, and now you're going to have a third section that is going to the new body but under the old set of rules.
Well, yeah, 75 Dublin is the one that I hear is like going through all, going to have to go through all three processes. Or going through the two. It was appealed under one and then appealed under the LPAD, and then now, so I don't know where it stands now, but certainly, certainly that is it. I guess in some ways we may have seen a foreshadowing when they closed down, you know, a couple of months ago, the resource center for the LPAT resource center that they had, that the previous government had set up to help individuals navigate through the system, because before there was like one person for 2,000 cases a year, and they were going to well staff this. It had just been started up for 6 months, and then they closed it, and that was it. So, yeah.
What do you think AMO's going to be like this year?
Well,
because you have a seat at the table.
I have a seat at the table, and now Cam does too. Yeah. So the mayor does as well. So, and he's, you know, on the Memorandum of Understanding Committee as well. So gets face to face with the ministers. And, you know, I think it's, they've gone away until the federal election. So, it has felt like we've just been like a punching bag, like lately. It's like, oh, what's today? Like every day there's something new, and AMO's, you know, madly trying to put out, you know, responses to everything. And, I think it's, you know, when I sit at the table there, it's a bit of shock and awe and trying to figure out exactly, you know, what the legislation means. And so much of it, like the Bill 108, there's so many more details that we don't know, which could be okay, or they could be disastrous, and we don't really know yet. And so it's a fine line between being critical and also trying to keep the door open to work with them on that, because they're very close to Queen's Park, the staff down there, because they, you know, they work with Queen's Park staff, right?
Right.
And, you know, and they want to make sure the doors are still open for them to come and have input as well.
Could you just talk a bit about what AMO is? Because I think some of the listeners might not know. We know what it is.
So, I did mention it's the Association of Municipalities of Ontario. So it's an association of, and there's 41 board members.
And drawn from the 144, I guess, right?
444 municipalities. Toronto's not part of it. They have their own, rules.
Yeah.
Rules.
Yeah.
You know, and it's divided up in, you know, there's a rural caucus, there's a small town caucus, I'm in the large urban caucus, and there's regional caucuses and things like that. So, but then we all get together for the one big meeting every couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
And they have full staff, policy advisors.
All right.
You do raise a point, though, because, you know, a lot of this is coming from who's in government, but there's a permanent, you know, administrative staff at Queen's Park too, who are maybe caught in the middle with with implementing these changes, having to explain it to, you know, municipalities. They've long been the middlemen, and now they really are caught in the middle.
Yep.
I can imagine that's a comfortable position.
I mean, there's ministry staff that are still implementing what the government of day wants them to do. And I guess if they don't like it, they can choose to leave, or they just have to stay and try to implement that the best way that they can. And maybe some of them, partially agree, because they're also part of the recommending the things to the government too. Mm. So AMO, you know, of course, you know, has relationships, you know, with ministers and deputy ministers and parliamentary assistants, whatever, all of those people and some of the senior staff as well.
This is all part of Bill 108, which we've sort of been talking around, but you mentioned that the DCs, the development charges, and how that could affect the long-term planning is... I think there's supposed to be a report coming to council a week from Monday about what that might look like. But what are you hearing?
Well, it's hard to know what it's going to look like because we don't have the details. So the big thing is taking out soft services like libraries and parks and things like that and putting them into a different community benefit fee structure. Maybe that's okay, but maybe it's not because they're going to cap that too. So right now, Grove doesn't pay for itself. I think it's 75% to 80% only pays for is paid for through development charges. But you know, so this could further exacerbate the problem. Possibly not. We're worried about getting enough money. I mean, there won't be park and land in lieu, for, you know, anymore. Or parkland dedications anymore. So it's really, it's concerning. We don't know yet what the implications are, but it certainly are, you've probably seen tweets from our treasurer, very concerned. The treasurers all across Ontario are very concerned about this. And the government has committed to further talks on the details and things like that. So we can only keep our fingers crossed.
So for people who don't know, parkland dedication is a thing where developers are supposed to reserve part of their space for parks, but if they can't make that work for whatever reason, they can pay a portion of money and can give that to the city so the city can find parkland elsewhere. And so that's gone now?
Yeah, that's been taken out.
So it's
under the new community benefits fee,
right? So they still pay a fee, but now that you have this amount, that what, like, can go to parkland or go to?
Oh, we don't know yet.
That's up in the air.
Okay. Like, we don't even, and you know, I'm not even sure how much of that is taken out. Like, that's what the whole problem. There's not enough details for us to really respond to. So,
because I mean, I'm still trying to wrap my head around it. And I did a whole podcast this week about 108, and there's the hard DCs, which are things like the street, the actual street through development
and infrastructure.
And so you know, sewers and pipes and street lamps and things. And you have the soft DCs, which are things like that go to the construction of community centers and libraries and parks. And the hard DCs are protected. So when developers build a subdivision, they will still, the city's still responsible having that money, and will have that money there for the streets. What's at stake is things like the South End Community Center and
the main library. Yeah. And the South End Community Center is 75% funded by DCs.
Right.
So it's a huge issue. The library downtown, not as much. It doesn't have as much development charges.
Right.
But I mean, you may have parks with no equipment in them too. That's the type of thing that you may have as well.
Right.
But the one positive I would say is that they did put waste management into the DCs as a hard service.
Yeah. Small victories.
If we have to expand our waste management plan, we'll be
right. I mean, that does play into what we were talking about earlier on the show, and it's plastic.
Huh?
Yeah. So I know there was a lot of excitement about the possibility of banning single-use plastics, but from what I understand, that's now folded into the review of the Solid Waste Master Plan.
Mm-hmm.
So that might be just in time for the federals.
And I think that's where it probably belongs, like a comprehensive look at that. But with the feds doing it, I mean, it'll roll out across the country. You know, some of these things happen. I remember when we banned pesticides, we banned smoking in restaurants and stuff like that. You know, we did it, and then a year later, the province did it. I mean, so we went through all that leadership pain, and then it was like, oh, well, somebody else did it.
Right, but, you know, on the other hand,
it's good.
That's leadership, right?
Yeah. Because it adds to the conversation. So when you're seeing pressures in all the municipalities, and it's a popular issue, and it's an important issue, you know, I think, you know, then the feds and the province can take it on. I mean, even the province is still, this hasn't changed. They're looking at, you know, the source of waste, paying more for the disposal of it. So, I mean, that's positive that hasn't changed that direction.
I just want to revisit one other thing on 108, because I posed this question to somebody at WWF, again, World Wildlife Fund, not wrestling.
I was going to say the wrestling. You want to ask me about wrestling?
I asked Macho Man Randy Savage about Bill 108. No. One of the things I wanted to get at was, could theoretically counsel just sort of ignore the loosening of protections, like saying, you know what, this area has, let's say, Jefferson Salamander. We don't want to pay to slay. You're going to protect this habitat, and you know that's the will of council. Is that like theoretically possible that council could just like ignore the loosening of these previous restrictions, or is that just something that's going to end up at the LPAT eventually?
It could end up at the LPAT. So I'm not really sure because you have to align your, you know, the municipal policies have to align with provincial land use policies.
Yeah.
So I'm not quite sure how that would play out. But certainly that would be my hope, that we could continue to make those decisions locally and that, you know, developers would respect that.
Right. Because one of the main developers, Windmill, who's helping to redevelop Baker, actually took part in Mike Schreiner's press conference that we can develop responsibly.
Yes.
And while still...
I think a lot of them are wanting to sort of get on the bandwagon of, you know, sustainability and, you know, net zero. And I think that's the way we're going. And, you know, you need to apply pressure. And if you can't apply... You know, as somebody was saying, if you can't do it with a stick, sometimes you have to do it with a carrot.
Your ward mate, Leanne Piper, is saying she's not going to vote for a development that's not net zero.
Yeah.
Thoughts?
She's pushing it. I mean, you know, I think if we all decided that, I think, you know, that may put us up for some kind of challenges at that. But you know, it is enshrined in our official plan around energy consumption and net zero. It's all in there in the policies. So, you know, how effective the implementation is for that. I'm not sure, but certainly if we keep asking for it and we keep putting the pressure on, I think that's positive. And, more power to her, like for raising it and raising the stake in it. I mean, certainly the developer that came the other night for a development, he'd heard about it in the afternoon that she was said, and he was already thinking about ways that he could make this development more sustainable, and they hadn't considered that before. Mm. So, like, that's good, you know, that we're talking about it, and you know, we have this kind of expectation.
Mm. I have noticed a bit more pushback on developers, and not just on environmental stuff, but on, like, you know, there was the one in the West End. Back in one of the first council meetings of this term, where there was a lot of pushback about, you know, 10, 13 stories.
800 units.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the one. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, then when they first come in, they always seem to be somewhat overdeveloped. There's always like reductions and setbacks and reduced amenity areas. And so, yeah, they all seem to come in that way. Mm. We'll see what it's like when it comes back.
Negotiating ploy.
That's it. Well, you know, it sometimes feels like that.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
What's coming up that you got your eye on? What are you going to be talking
about? Well, the strat plan. We're working on a strategy plan now that sort of comes out of the community plan. And so councillors, you know, we've been getting together a few times to talk about what our priorities are for this term and what we can realistically accomplish. Mm-hmm. And, I don't think there'll be any surprises coming out of it from what we saw in the community plan and what all of us heard during the election. So, you know, people want to live in a... want to continue to live in a green community. Transit is high on, you know, we'll be high on the list too. I think homelessness. I think there's a number of issues. Certainly, you know, climate crisis, emergency will be. Mm-hmm. We could use both words, could we? It certainly will be up there, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. How about we end things with a good news story?
I think we're the first in Canada who have done this Indigenous Sacred Fire Circle in mm-hmm. Royal City Park. I don't know if you've seen it. Mm-hmm. But we had a little ceremony last week with the people involved and worked in it. But because in a lot of communities, you can't do fires in parks, right? So there's a lot of things you have to get around. And so it took an enormous amount of work and collaboration with the fire department, with our staff, and with the indigenous community to put this together. And it's what they wanted. And what's so neat about this is that this is where indigenous people have gathered, the varying tribes for thousands of years mm-hmm. before we came along, and that area is where it was the joining of the two rivers was a meeting place, and I think that's really great. The four rocks are the grandfathers, and there's the granite one in the north, and the black rocks of Rockwood to the east, and then the other two are limestone. It just seems all really appropriate. And on June 21st at I can't remember the time, I think it's 6:30. Yeah, there's a special ceremony. So I would, you know, and this is the first in Canada, I think, that have been able to do this. And I think it's very exciting and very lovely because, and I can see it from my house. So that's really nice. I can go and sit there and enjoy it too.
Well, it seems worth noting that next Friday is the National Indigenous Day celebrations,
fabulous.
Which are in Royal City Park.
Yeah.
In Ward 5.
Yeah.
Right there in Ward 5.
That's right.
Where it all happens. Well, Kathy, thank you so much for taking time out and joining us today. If people want to reach out to you, how can they do that?
Well, they can email me at kathy.downer@guelph.ca or call me 519-829-5912, and I'd be happy to chat.
Well, we are happy you took time out to chat with us today. So thank you.
Thank you.
And that is it for the show.
That's it. Oh my
goodness. That's it. That's a wrap.
Goes fast, doesn't it? Especially when you have company.
Yeah, that's right.
Sorry, a guest. Feels like company.
It's good company. Anyway, we will have more good company in the next couple of weeks. Mike Salisbury is going to be coming in on June 20th, so next Thursday. And then Mark McKinnon will be in after that on June 27th. And then maybe we'll do that beach call with Mike from Havana.
Mike from Havana. Yes.
You can stay connected to us at our website, opensourcesguelph.com. Find us on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire or on Twitter at @OS_Guelph. If you'd like to listen to our show again, you can by downloading it from our website every Monday at the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or you can subscribe it through your favorite podcast app on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson, or you can go to my political site, guelphpolitico.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and I blog on occasion at spannerbook.wordpress.com.
And stay tuned for DJ Sounds Good to Me at the top of the hour here on CFRU, 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And we will be definitely back next Thursday at 5 p.m. for more Open Sources, and we will see you then.